now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome aboard the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Obviously not a blue light special today. Oh, here they are right now as we speak. You know, that's an amazing story, George. That one about Operation Exposure.
Yeah.
Where now, 13 people in a very short time were captured. This obviously goes on a lot.
You know, that's the thing I was thinking.
Your phone's ringing.
Yeah, an important call must be coming in. Must be the mayor calling me. Yeah, but the police department catches 13 in 13 hours, undercover female cops, snapping photos of these perverts on the train. It's amazing.
Unbelievable. Don't you hate it when somebody's cell phone goes off at work? Isn't it? It's really bothersome.
Mine does not. Mine vibrates.
Exactly.
Good morning,
Mr. Mayor. Nice to see you this morning. In fact, I even mentioned that this week. We were talking about pet peeves and stuff, but somebody said it was cell phones going off at work. I said, well, the mayor's gotten very good at his BlackBerry. He can actually talk and read the BlackBerry all at the same time.
I'm slowly learning how to deal with technology.
How you doing this morning? All right?
I'm good, yes.
Yeah, you look good.
Thank you.
Ready for a summertime weekend?
It's a reasonably quiet weekend. The Gay Pride Parade is on Sunday. I'll march on that. Before that, I've got some interviews for judges. So there's some work to do this weekend. I might manage to fit in, you know, a few holes of golf here. What about you?
Well, you've been traveling. Well, I've got the same sort of plans. No, I'm not going to be marching in the Gay Pride Parade. Well, I can assure you that.
You're welcome to
come and march with me. I'm not going to be interviewing any judges.
Well, that one I can't include you in, but I'm sure I could get you an invitation to the parade.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
This actually is a fun parade.
You have been busy this week doing some traveling of your own. First and foremost, on Monday, you greeted the president at the airport.
Yeah, it was, you know, it is always impressive when you see the helicopters and the 747
even
painted with the United States. It's not for me. Impressive to everybody.
No,
am I impressed? Absolutely. United States of America, and it's painted blue and
it's an awesome
red.
Play.
It is awesome, yeah. It's not a new one. It looked to me a few models old, but I'm glad they're not wasting our money. Anyways, the president arrived, and I had 30 seconds or a minute with him.
Your reaction from the papers that said you should have used the 30 seconds to beat him up.
You wonder what people think about it. Yeah, look, the president is the president of the United States, and I said to him, and I believe this, almost all New Yorkers, you can't in New York say everybody, but whether you agree with the president or not, he is the president, and I respect for him in the office. He comes to New York not that frequently, and I can't go every time, but this was a time I could fit in the schedule. He's going out to give a commencement speech at the Merchant Marine Academy, which is just at the northern end of the Throgs Neck, I guess, Throgs Neck Bridge. And it was a nice moment to chit-chat, and I did work in. I said, thank you for making Homeland Security or urging Homeland Security money be given out on risk-based. I think that said enough. And the time to go and to...
Did he roll his eyes when you said that?
No.
I speculated that maybe he went, oh, God, here comes Bloomberg again, his eyes.
Peter King was on the congressman from Long Island who's been very helpful and runs the House Committee on Homeland Security, said when he was on, he came up with the president on a plane, he said, oh, the president says, Bloomberg, he's a nice guy. And look, George Bush is I don't know him that well, but he's a very charming person to talk to, whether you agree with him or not.
I'm sure.
And I think he was pleased. And we had two Democratic one congresswoman, who represent the district where Kennedy Airport is, two districts right close by, and Carolyn McCarthy and Gary Ackerman, and they were both there. And, you do this. This is not politics. This is not. This is just respect. And incidentally, you did notice the Reader's Digest study that showed New York City was the politest city in the world. Well, this was just another example of
why
exactly
we are there.
Of why we're there, because you treat everybody nicely. You know, I gave a speech in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and I criticized the lack of civility and of openness that I think more and more you see in this country. Students, for example, who if they disagree with the commencement speaker are rude to the commencement speaker. And I said in my speech, I was always taught that if somebody is invited to your home by another member of your family, even if you disagree with them, you are polite to them, and people should be polite. There's a ways to express your views and say where you differ. It's not to do it every time, and it's not to do it in a rude, discourteous way. But you're right. I mean, there was a couple of one congressman who said, "Oh, he should have screamed at the president right there."
Yeah, right.
Come on,
trip him on the ramp coming down. And
right.
Know.
I mean, you wonder how how somebody like that guy who said that, how he could ever get anything done. Who would ever deal with him?
To your point about politeness and the confrontation level, the noise level in America, and it's not just America, it's around the world. Interesting study reported today about Americans being isolated, that they don't have the numbers of people that they can call friends, that they can talk to, that they can confide in. I maintain that a lot of this has to do with computers, iPods. I just got my first iPod, and I've been playing it on the train. You put those things in your ear, and you have totally isolated yourself. Nobody comes close to you. Nobody can talk to you. You can't hear them. And I think a lot of this is just basic human communication, one-on-one.
Yeah,
Or
the lack thereof. I take the subway every day. I don't wear – I have an iPod with my Spanish lessons on. It's in my briefcase. I don't listen to it on the train because I try to talk to people. You know, look, part of the answer is my job is to talk to people. If somebody in this city wants to talk to the mayor, within the practical limits that you can't talk to everybody all the time, I should be available. And I've just always thought that it's my responsibility. You go to ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings and do all of those kinds of ceremonial things. You do as many as you can. You march in parades. That's part of the job. But I think all of us benefit from getting a chance to talk to other people, and particularly people that you don't know and about subjects you'd never thought about before. It expands your mind, and it's fun.
Well, yeah. Also, the thing that I've talked about many times is the fact that most of us don't know who our neighbors are. You know, look to the apartment next to you, and a lot of people have no clue who lives right next
to
you.
Yeah, that is...
it's sad, I think.
It is sad. I mean, I was, you know, I live in a house that I know the people, not everybody in the apartment buildings on either side. There's a school next door, and I know some of the teachers in the school, and my company always invites the sixth grade or one of the classes to come and visit for a day from that school because of the connection with me. But I always talk to the doorman when I walk down the street. I can't tell you I know their names necessarily, but hi, how are you?
You know, I'm sure there are a lot of people listening now going, you know, get onto some substance and stuff. But this stuff is important. It's not important necessarily for John and the mayor to talk about, but it's important for us to think about.
But, you know, we can whip ourselves, but I would make the case that New Yorkers, the reason that politeness study showed New York City is the most polite city, we do talk to each other. More so than other people. Part of the answer is we walk or take mass transit much more so than mm-hmm. people in other cities. When you're in your car, you can't talk to anybody else. When you're on the bus, on the subway, or the street corner, you can a little bit in that, so it's easier for us to do it. But also, I think New Yorkers are more interested in each other. That's what the politeness thing shows. You know, can I help you? You know, do you need some help carrying that? You need some help finding where that is?
I see that downstairs in the train station when I commute. People helping other people that are, you know, are bewildered.
You know, I've been for years. People from overseas say to me, "I can't believe it. I was in New York. I was at a street corner with a map, and this cop comes up to me and says, excuse me, I'm a New York City police officer. May I help you?'" And they just don't do that elsewhere in the world. That is something that not exclusively, but is New York.
Speaking of talking, the mayor did down in Washington this week over terror dollars. We'll talk about that. Let me take a break, Mr. Mayor. We will be coming right back. All right, we continue here at 77 WABC Friday Get Together. Mayor Michael Bloomberg talking about the president. You were in Washington as well before the committee, saying, "Hey, we need, you know, what's with the terror money and the 40% reduction?"
Well, we live in a dangerous world. The federal government creates a fund to help municipalities prepare to respond if, God forbid, they had to. Fought very hard to get the monies to be given out based on threat as opposed to population. Bush, in all fairness, said he thought that's the way it should be done. Congress did say, okay, 60% given out that ways. And then what happens when Homeland Security gets the money? Well, they instead of the seven cities that they thought were high-risk cities, all of a sudden it's 46 cities. So, you know, it's the old class.
How were you received down there?
You say one thing and do it. Couldn't have been better. There was, you know.
People buy with the argument you were making?
Yeah, I mean, no, you did not see. This was before a House committee. I didn't see any of the congressmen or congresswomen stand up and say, well, why don't you take the money that was given to our district and you, Washington, and you, New York, because I was testifying with the mayor of Washington, D.C., and we'll give the money to you. They didn't say that, but they did acknowledge that it's pretty preposterous to not believe that New York and Washington are the premier cities. Now, you saw in the paper today the federal authorities arrested seven people, I think it was, with a threat against the Sears Tower. Chicago has big, iconic buildings. You know, L.A. is an enormous port. There are big cities. What I tried to say to Congress was, look, there's a difference between a critical piece of infrastructure and a threat. It is true. They can identify 250,000 critical things in this country. And they are, I'm sure they're right on most of them. But that doesn't mean that terrorists are likely to go after them. For example, some are impossible, some they wouldn't even know about, some they couldn't get to if they wanted to. You know, the fact of the matter is what terrorists try to do is to make a statement and create fear and panic among people. So, you know, in the big cities bringing down an iconic building like the World, or buildings like the World Trade Center, or going into the Pentagon, those are things that they would understand. They know about them. They send a message. And if you said to insurance companies, where are the risks in this country? They wouldn't have 250,000. They'd have a handful, and then there'd be a big gap because the likelihood of somebody going for one of the non-big visible ones is very small.
I talked with Congressman Peter King, who I know
King was the head of this committee. Yeah.
Exactly, and he was down with you in Washington, that he is going to work to get more monies from different pots, if you will, to New York City to help put things like the Ring of Steel, the cameras
yeah,
in
I
lower
mean,
Manhattan.
You know, what I have said, and this is 1,000 times, is number one, I will go ahead and do whatever we have to do to keep this city safe. Now, there's always limits. You don't have an infinite amount of money. And there's no, you can never say this is enough. Only retrospectively can you say, oh, we had enough because we weren't attacked. But we're not skimping on anything that we think is critical just because we haven't got federal money yet or ever. First thing is, you know, the police department, fire department, emergency management, health and mental hygiene. These are DOT, the Department of Transportation, takes care of the bridges. These agencies, I've said, you know, tell me what you need, and if it makes sense to me, we're going to go ahead and do it, and then I'll go out and try to find a ways to pay for it. It would be very helpful if the federal government helped. Federal government has two policies, basically, not just for Homeland Security, but two policies that hurt this city, other than maybe they give it money elsewhere. One is they say, we don't want to give you any money for something you've already done. So if we need a piece of equipment and I say, buy it now because we need it now and I can't wait around for Congress, I've got to protect this city. Later on, they say, oh, we're sorry, we're not going to pay for it. But another city that was derelict, left there in their duties, left
so
there.
They want a fire engine.
They left their the public exposed. Whether they got caught or not, they left the public exposed. They can get the money. So we're being penalized for doing what's right. The incentives are just lined up incorrectly. And the second problem that we have with the federal government and their policies is that in the end, technology is helpful, but what prevents terrorists and reduces crime is feet on the street. It's cops and firefighters and OEM workers and investigators who are in the neighborhoods, understand the neighborhoods, keep their eyes and their ears open, recognize instinctively, just based on their training, something that isn't quite right. And technology is not good at doing those kinds of things. And then take steps to catch the bad guys or prevent them from getting where the bad guys want to go. And the federal government doesn't pay for that kind of program. In fact, one of the programs that is going out in the federal government that was very successful is a program called COPS, which gave extra police officers or money for extra police officers to cities around the country.
That's being eliminated?
In the end, the ways you bring down crime is to put more cops on the street. The ways you bring down fires is to have firefighters that can respond quickly. They both need equipment, they both need training and all of that. But in the end, it's the quality of the people that you have and the number of people that you have.
You don't think the federal government's going to change those rules, though? Or do you? Do you think there's enough pressure that maybe they...
You know, they don't have to change the rules. They could interpret them slightly differently.
Okay, fair enough. You mentioned OEM. Last Friday, we got into, just by sort of happenstance, a conversation about preparedness. It's had to do with hurricanes and the fact that the OEM and the city of New York have been doing some practicing, this,
yep,
that, and the other thing. Saturday morning, I read in the newspapers that the federal government has released a study that shows that New York City isn't prepared.
You know, you just wonder where this is.
And I'm thinking of you Saturday morning.
I saw that. I don't know where they whether they've ever been here, but there's not a lot of evidence of that. I mean, look,
they come to those conclusions which ultimately affect the city.
We have 8.1 million people, and hurricanes are actually easy to prepare for because you know where they are, when they're coming, and you want to move people away from danger. The ones that are harder are things like biological, where you're not sure they exist, and then it's not clear you want people to move away because they could spread something. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, how would you keep people contained? Some things there's no easy answer for. For example, when I was running for office, I think one of my opponents demanded, "What are you going to do in case of a nuclear attack?" Well, okay.
There's some rude lines.
Right.
That doesn't get you.
But hurricanes, so we are attacked. And we have to prepare not only for what we'll do with the 8.1 million people in the city, and really it's the ones that are in low-lying areas, but if you take a look at a map, people that live in Nassau and Suffolk County, there are higher areas in both counties, and so they can go to. But if you had to evacuate all of Nassau and Suffolk, it goes right through New York City. Yep. So we have to work with the other authorities as well.
There's also the issue here that you like the one that you explained about the 2003 suspected potential rumored attack on the subways that you talked about, that you knew about. You've got to walk that fine line, not only from a publicity point of view, but from an action point of view.
Yeah, I mean,
and what do you do and what you don't
case,
do?
You know, listen, I've got a clearance, as does Ray Kelly, and federal government shares information with you, and then we take the steps that we think appropriate. Sometimes you have to take those steps without telling people why you're taking those steps, but nevertheless, and my recollection, it was a while ago, but we were satisfied in terms of the amount of information we got, how quickly we got that information, and we made some minor adjustments in how we deploy our people. Keep in mind, you always want to change the deployment of the people and your tactics all the time, so nobody can predict that. But it's a dangerous world. You always have threats. You have to make assessments as to how real they are, and there's no guarantees. You can't be 100% sure, but you can't evacuate every building every day. You know, so you have to go ahead and go about your lives. I believe that we are safe in the city. I am. The test that I've always used when we talk about a security issue, I always ask, for example, a police commissioner, Ray, would you let your sons work in that building? If he looks me in the eye and says yes, then okay. But I think that's a good ways to take a look. And I always think to myself, am I comfortable with my two daughters living here? And the answer is yes. I think they're safer here than they would be anyplace else. No guarantees. You don't know what's going to happen. But it's when it gets down to it's not just numbers, but it's the people you love the most. And while you'd always like more security, is it a reasonable amount?
If you have to say I would do it differently for my family than the rest of them, then it's time.
I've never liked this. You know, right. There's this cave in West Virginia for Congress to evacuate to.
Right, underneath the Greenbrier.
Right, exactly right. I mean, you know, my recollection is they should be staying in Washington.
Some would say some other things as well. let's take a break. We've made it to the half hour. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, we've got a lot more questions, a lot more conversations. Stay with us right now on the half hour, though. John Gambling and you and Mayor Michael Bloomberg all together here at 77 WABC on our Friday get-together. Interesting, the state legislature, lawmakers in Albany, have said that they do not want the memorial down at the World Trade Center site to have a fee attached to it. Now, you've made it perfectly clear in the past. Do you think that there's no other way to afford it?
Well, I hope the governor, I haven't talked to him about it, but I hope the governor vetoes the bill, because it's probably true, without being able to charge, we can't build a memorial. I mean, it's very simple. There's an ongoing cost. Estimates are roughly $50 million a year.
And that seems like an extraordinary amount.
Well, because there's so much security required, okay. and none of that includes what in the private sector you'd have as a fund to for repairs that you know are going to come up, which they never do in government. So, look, we've got to go raise $170+ million to get to our $500 million to pay for this. Rest of those monies, $250 million, is public monies that the LMDC put in, taxpayers' monies. This is going to be a stretch to build it, and the city can't be in a position down the road where people say, oh, come on, you've got to pay for all the maintenance. We've got enough things to do. We've got to have police on the streets and firefighters ready to put out the fires or hopefully prevent them. We've got to pick up the garbage. We've got to incarcerate our prisoners. We've got to teach our kids. We've got to help those that society, you know, that really need some help. We've got all these things to do, and charging to go into a museum is a common practice. Somebody's got to pay the salaries.
Well, according to what I've read, I haven't seen anything in the bill or from the legislature that identifies who would pay the bill.
What worries me is, you know, I'll be gone by the time this is. It's going to get finished just about the time that I leave office, but I don't want to leave this city in a position where all of a sudden they've got to come up with another $40 or $50 million, and those in today's dollars, who knows what it's going to cost down the road? And all these estimates are never low, or never high. I mean, they're always low. We've got to find a ways to have a source of revenue to pay for this. Now, another thing you could do is you could go out and you could get the state or the legislature to put $1 billion into a trust fund, which would kick off $50 million every year in interest, and that would pay for it. But I don't think they're going to do that.
No, something tells me
right.
That's
right. And I think if you tried to raise it privately, you couldn't do it either. We've got to think with all of these things. Whenever we pass a law, we've got to sit back and think, how much is it going to cost? And given there's only so many dollars that we are willing to send to the government through taxes, what other things that we might want to do can we not do? And I've always thought to myself, it would be great if every time the legislature passes a bill, whether I sign it or not, even when I sign it and think it's a good bill, to say to the public, okay, we're going to do this, but the monies are going to come out of that program and that program and that group of employees and the potential for a raise for this other group. Because the real world is exactly that. It's just
In Albany.
It's not just in Albany. Every place. Yeah. Elected officials are always, and you can blame me as well, everybody, is unwilling to point out to the public the real cost, that they're going to have to pay for it, and if they're not going to pay more for it, they're going to pay for it in reduced services elsewhere.
I hope they're listening to you up there, but I know that they're not, because I have a sneaking suspicion that this bill was done with the understanding that the governor would never allow this to happen because there is no other funding source available, and that it was done for optics.
This business of leaving it to the governor all the time, and then we go criticize the governor.
Right, exactly.
As you know,
it's a game.
You know, I think Pataki's getting a bum rap on a lot of this stuff. There's a lot of times that, George and I don't agree on everything, and no two people will ever agree. You know, you and your wife don't agree on everything. But, well, so you do.
I do. I just say yes or no.
That's right. You want to say that one more time? Your wife was listening?
Yes.
Good.
Right again.
But you know, to pass bills and leave it to the governor to do the thing so that everybody can say, well, I voted for it, and without the damage because it never gets done. I've always objected to that kind of practices in our government.
All right. Last week we talked about the insurance companies balking on the Silverstein, the bid for his money coming off to rebuild these things, and I gather they're still balking.
They're still balking. Well, let me say this. We haven't heard back from them. Pataki put out a statement today that I and Governor Corzine both are totally in agreement with, which says the insurance companies, come on, this is too important. Let's stop quibbling, and you have this obligation. We will restructure things if we have to make sure that we're in compliance with the finest points, but you owe the money, pay up. Let's get on with it. And if we have to go to court, they should make no mistake about it. We will go to court.
Speaking of going to court, big push, 9/11 workers liability, class action suit, I think 8,000 signatures or something, trying to get monies from the city for health purposes.
There is a insurance fund that was set up with federal monies to pay claims arising out of the World Trade Center disaster and the subsequent cleanup, claims against private companies, claims against the city, state. The whole idea was that there would be this fund, the monies would be there, and there's got to be a cap at some point. The law is law. There is a law that says in civil emergencies, the liability is limited, and whatever the law is, we're arguing in court. That's the law, and that's what we believe our the liability should be. Nobody says that for a second that if you are sick and it came out of that, that you shouldn't get the best care and help. But the city just doesn't have this open-ended checkbook. I get back to, if you pay this, where's the money going to come from? And they have this insurance fund. That's what we believe should take care of it.
Speaking of money, staying on that for just a second, 16 labor unions of city employees, almost half the employees of the city, have banded together to negotiate with the city on a new contract?
They're trying to form, this is a small group of unions. There's the old joke when it comes to clothing, one size fits all, fits no one. Each of these unions has very different needs. Their members have different needs, do different jobs where work rules vary dramatically, different markets for their skills. Some are easy to find people for. Some are very scarce, and you really need to pay up and pay the market price to get them. Some of the unions in this coalition that's trying to be formed aren't even city workers. Some of the things that this group, the leader, says that they want to bargain for isn't up to them. It's up to all the municipal workers. Traditionally, it's been done by the MLC, the Municipal Labor Coalition. So I don't know that it's anything particularly
So you think it's probably going to go away?
What the scary thing is what's happening in Albany. There is, once again, they're going to leave it up to Pataki to do the right thing and veto it. But to weaken the Taylor law so that all municipal workers can strike and paralyze the city and put our lives in jeopardy.
Where did they stick this amendment?
This is a big bill. It's passed both. I think it's passed both houses. And it would, if the city, quote, isn't negotiating in good faith, which means doesn't cave in, then they'd automatically get raises, and the penalties are reduced if they strike. We didn't learn anything.
Why on earth would Albany want to do this?
Because they're pressured by a handful of the unions, who then would be in a position to just it would just bankrupt the city. I don't think there's any question about that the city would have no more negotiating power. We don't, in tough times, have a lot of money. to give away. And, in fact, even in good times, it's the public's money. You can argue we should, in good times, not take so much out of everybody's pockets. But this is an intolerable, unconscionable piece of legislation, and hopefully Pataki will once again be the savior of the public.
All right. Let's see here. One of the city council members, Tom Frieden, the health commissioner,
yes,
has done a great job. Guy is focused. I mean, he really cares.
Some people say that it's a nanny state. Our job is to save lives. Every New Yorker should, every day they get up, say thank God for Tom
Frieden.
What
about the idea of rezoning for fast food so that people have the opportunity to go to Dunkin' Donuts?
I will let the Congress, the city councilman, fight that battle. Personally, every once in a while, I will say I enjoy a Big Mac or a Whopper. Obesity is a very, he's right in the sense that obesity is a very big problem, and particularly with kids, because they will be for their whole lives. The studies show if you are obese as a child, it's very hard to ever get your life back in order, and out of that comes heart attacks and diabetes and lots of other things. Trans fats is something that you see more and more people talking about. The federal government's tried to ban it in some places. Wendy's, I think, said that they were going to take trans
fats. Somebody sued KFC, I think, to get different oils.
Yeah, I mean, trans fats are the kind of fat that makes your bad cholesterol a lot worse or gives you a lot more of it. And you can cook and have exactly the same taste using other kinds of fats. They don't last quite as long, which is why some restaurants like to do it. And Tom Frieden would like to warn people and get stores and restaurants to not use trans fats. We'd all be better off for it. But I don't know that using the zoning regulations is a way to do that, but I'll let
work on that one?
Yes.
Okay, very good. We've got some telephone callers, got a couple of open lines, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. If you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, you will be next. And this show brought to you this morning in part by the traffic.
WABC. Dan,
we continue now at 77 WABC. We're going to go to the phones. There's Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And Dan, you're going to be up first with the mayor. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Mayor. My name is Dan. I'm from the Rockaways. And although my question doesn't pertain to this, I want to personally thank you for going down to Washington and making a case for New York for those funds that we really should be getting.
Dan, what's the question? Thank you.
Okay, question is, Mr. Mayor, are you aware of that we have a very big problem within the Parks Department, specifically with the lifeguard testing for young children? I had taken a group of children from the Rockaways down to a course over the course of the winter. It took about 8 months, and had them train in for lifeguards to be on the beaches. And I was very surprised at what they encountered during a testing procedure. I wanted to bring it to your attention. I think if you knew what they were going through, that you would probably be very angry, and I think maybe you would remedy it. When they went down for the testing, the parents were locked out of the room. The children went in, and again, this is after 8 months of trying hard and swimming throughout the course of the week. They were subject to being yelled and cursed at. They asked for their times at the end of the testing procedure, and they were told they wouldn't be given them. They were told as a group that you would be sent to the pools. Specific emphasis was on the fact that a lot of them were girls. I have three daughters, that they would probably be better suited off in pools and weren't going to be going to the beaches. So my question is, I'm sure that you're not.
What is the question, Dan? We got a time problem.
Okay, the question is this, are you aware of that there seems to be a problem specifically within this division and the way that they go about the testing?
Dan, I have not heard of any problems. You're the first one that mentioned it. I will this afternoon talk to the commissioner of the Departments of Parks and Recreation, Adrian Benepe. And make sure that he looks into it. Whether there's a problem or not, I don't know, but I will. You may rest assured I will talk to him today. As a matter of fact, I will call him right after the program and see what we can do.
Thank you, Dan.
What about Kathleen and Ozone Park?
Kathleen, you're up next. You got the mayor, Kathleen. Go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honor. I live in the border of South Richmond Hill and Ozone Park. The last 2 to 3 years, the firework activity over the 4th of July is out of control. Could you please issue a special directive to the 102 precinct, the 106 precinct, to rein in this illegal firework
activity? I will talk to the police commissioner as well, 102, 106. We are making a very major effort, Kathleen, this year on fireworks. On Staten Island, for some reason or other, it's probably worse than any other place in the city. So far, we have the arrests for fireworks up 200 or 300%. We've confiscated cases and cases and carloads of fireworks. We started to confiscate cars that we catch people driving back. Typically, most of these fireworks are bought in Pennsylvania, where the law says they can't sell them to Pennsylvanians, but they can sell them to out-of-staters.
Yeah, we talked about it this week. Yeah,
exactly. And we even had some of our police officers down there taking pictures of the license plates so we can look for them when they come back. You know, fireworks are fun to watch, and I would urge everybody to go and watch 4th of July, Macy's. I'll certainly go. It's one of the great fireworks displays in the world.
But leave it to the pros.
But leave it to the pros, yeah. The kids, you know, one of these little cherry bombs can take off your finger or blind you. And, you know, sparklers burn at such a high temperature that they really, you know, can burn right through the skin and into the flesh. And all of these things, some of them just they have 1,000 different parts to them. They go in every different direction. And sometimes the kids light them and they walk over to look inside to see whether they've all gone off. And then there's that one with the delayed fuse gets them right in the face. The good news is in the last couple of years, we have brought the number of cases where kids have been brought into hospitals on 4th of July or over the period around 4th of July with the burns from fireworks, brought it down dramatically. So far this year, as of at least last week, we had none. Now, you still hear them going off.
Sure.
I mean, you know, this is a big problem, but the police are focusing on it. Anyways, Kathleen, I will mention that we'll take a look at Ozone Park as well.
Kathleen, thanks a lot.
Mindy in Far Rockaway.
Mindy, it's your turn with the mayor. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I live in Far Rockaway. Up until today, there used to be 4 major streets going east to west from the Far Rockaway to Marine Parkway Bridge. Because of the new construction of the houses, for which we thank you and we love dearly, 2 of the streets have been completely closed down. It now takes an extra 20 minutes to cross the Rockaway Peninsula. Are there any plans for opening additional east-west thoroughfares?
Well, I don't think you'll build any more streets, simply because you'd have to rip down so many houses to do them. I don't know. We're working on 2 of the 4 roads?
No, they demapped one of them, and the other one it only runs till the 70s. It does not go all the way across the peninsula.
All right, well, another one of my projects right after the show.
Afternoon.
I've got to talk to the police commissioner, the 102-106. I've got to talk to Adrian Benepe, the parks commissioner, about testing 4 lifeguards. And I will talk to Iris Wanshaw, commissioner of the Department of Transportation. Why can't you go east and west in Far Rockaway?
We'll see
Far Rockaway is actually fascinating, John. It's a long ways away from here. Somebody that lives there, they have a heck of a commute.
Yeah, to add 20 minutes, if that's true, you wouldn't want to do.
Yeah. It's one of those neighborhoods that was great, went through some very tough times, and is now coming back. Avern by the Sea, there's a whole big development. You know, you've got great views of the ocean. It's a nice community. There's actually one little piece of it that's not in New York City, I think.
Is it Nassau?
It might be in Nassau. It goes all the way out there, yeah. And it's a very diverse community, too. You don't think of it as that, but if you go out there, you'll see all sorts of different ethnic groups living there. And
it seems to me that
it's down.
Families have been there generationally to a certain degree.
Yeah, but that's true of a lot of these places. On a city island, they have terms, I forget what they call, for people who muscle clam diggers and mussel something or others. One group of people who live there all their lives, and then the others who come afterwards. On Staten Island, some people tell time pre and post bridge, meaning the Verrazano Bridge. It's funny how some of these groups, they can trace their ancestors back two or three generations in the same neighborhood.
My goodness gracious, what a surprise. The music just appeared here. Unfortunately, that means we got to go. So we'll see you next Friday.
Looking forward to it.
That'll be
Friday.
The 4th of July weekend. Start of the 4th of July with long
and
weekend.
There'll be some parades, which you can join me if you don't want to do the Gay Pride Parade on Sunday. What about some of the 4th of July parades?
I'll have to see if my calendar is free, whether or not we can.
I can talk to your wife, since she won't be talking to you now.
Then, of course, my answer will be yes. I'll see you next week. Have a nice week. Stick around. Chris Wallace joins us here at 77 WABC.
More American than any other news talk radio station.